Federal leaders like you know that modernizing IT requires updated technology and a culture shift. Stop reacting to change and start leading transformation. Visit BoozAllen.com/Federal News Radio.
Most federal agencies last fall sent the Trump administration long-term plans for how they intend to reduce their workforces. But not the Defense Department. No, the Pentagon submitted what it called a workforce rationalization plan, saying it needed more civilian employees, not fewer. Tom Hessel is DOD's Deputy Director for Total Force Management and Resources. He spoke with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu about what the Pentagon is calling a significant shift in its civilian workforce planning.
The most significant change that that we are attempting to do here with approaching workforce rationalization is empowering managers to utilize the full breadth of flexibilities and authorities at their disposal, consistent with all existing laws and statutes, policies and procedures, and workforce shaping tools to manage their workforce at the local level, consistent with their mission, the work necessary to successfully attain that mission, and the resources that are being made available to them through the programming and budgeting process, rather than suggesting that we size our workforce to predetermined levels or with limitations on force levels. So really looking at what is the mission. What is the mission that is being asked of me, a commander, to successfully contribute to the national security strategy and national defense strategy? And what is the most effective and efficient way that promotes readiness and capability to achieving that mission?
And another one of the specific contrasts that's called out in the plan is that you no longer want to manage your civilian workforce to arbitrary caps. Say a little bit more about which caps you're talking about. Are those enterprise level caps? Are those down at the organizational unit level? And what's different in that area?
So the interesting thing about that is that we're not actually doing anything from a legislative or legal perspective that is different. We're actually adhering to laws that Congress has enacted annually for well over 30 years that dictate that we manage our workforce to workload, mission, and available resources. What we're trying to do here is to move away from some of the notions that managers have in the past utilized as management tools, such as hiring freezes or limitations on replacements for attrition and limiting the number of hires, including contracts, based not on overall mission and overall funding, but on preset levels in those areas. So we're simply, again, empowering decision makers to utilize the resources that are available to them through the programming budgeting process and to make the most efficient and effective choices without a notion that there's a hiring freeze today, rather than there's a resource constraint or we need to reduce our mission because there's not available funding, but instead just shaping the workforce against the mission and the workload.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you're alluding to, Title 10 does explicitly tell the department that you're supposed to go find the most efficient mix of military and civilian and contractor personnel. At the same time, though, Congress has in recent years been giving specific mandates at the headquarters level, at least, to either reduce total headcount or reduce total spending. So are those two things in conflict at all, or do those more recent mandates at least complicate your job at all?
Actually, no. We see workforce rationalization as an effective tool available to decision makers to achieve the congressional mandates with respect to headquarters spending. The most recent mandates that have been legislated with respect to headquarters talk about the available resources and reducing the spend and the expenditures at the headquarter level while reprioritizing resources to recapitalization, modernization, and readiness recovery needs. Workforce rationalization and the tenets that are outlined in the National Business Operations Plan really complement and support that strategy because, again, it allows the decision makers at the headquarters levels and elsewhere to make the most effective use of their resources and not have unintended costs based on a predisposition to a type of labor source. And so we're looking at either increasing civilian footprint if necessary because it's more cost effective than leveraging contract support, and at the same time the National Business Operations Plan and the Workforce Rationalization Plan recognizes that there is a significant opportunities for continued reform and leveraging private sector capabilities. So we'll be pursuing, looking to opportunities to how we can better leverage the private sector to be more efficient and effective in how we meet our missions, both at the headquarters and below.
So talk a little bit more about the specific ways you're going to go about figuring out what the right mix is. And maybe I shouldn't say you, because it sounds like a lot of this is going to be decentralized and more of a situation where local folks are going to be empowered to make those decisions and find the best mix for them. But what's the guidance as to how exactly to go about doing that?
Absolutely. So you are absolutely correct that we are seeking a more decentralized approach that empowers decision makers to make those decisions at those local levels, given the circumstances and the unique missions that they are given. You said, how do we achieve the right mix? And we would say that there is no single right mix. There is no predetermined or a predisposed outcome or mix, because the number of factors contribute to how we determine the correct mix of active and reserve military personnel, civilian personnel, and contract support, including the nature of the mission, where the mission is being performed, the local labor market, costs associated with the mission, and the risks associated with different types of performances. So the intent here is to empower and provide a full toolbox, if you will, of and a full suite of flexibilities to managers, to include both the ability to convert to insource work from contract support to civilians if that's determined to be more appropriate or cost effective. At the same time, we need to seek to leverage the unique capabilities and effective performance of the private sector where we can, and part of that would be to have the ability once again to perhaps conduct public-private competitions or have a more business-informed process by which we can increasingly leverage the private sector for commercial functions that are better performed or more cost-effectively performed by the private sector rather than the government civilians, as well as looking at our military and civilian mix, identifying where we are using uniformed personnel, where there is not a demonstrated military essentiality. There's no need for a uniformed person. That work could be performed either by a private, by a DoD civilian or a private sector entity on behalf of the department, and also challenging kind of more traditional constructs of how we develop officer enlisted mix. We have a much more highly competent and educated enlisted force than we have ever had in the department, and they are more technically proficient and are capable of doing much more than how we've traditionally relied on it. So there's emerging domains of warfighting, cyber, remotely piloted aircraft, and the increased operationalization of many missions allows for us to make more well-reasoned decisions on how we size and structure our overall force mix to include military, civilians, and contractors working side by side.